Sanity.
Life.
Dignity.
Security.
Freedom.
Freedom.
Respect.
Justice.
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 Equality.
Equality.
Remedy. Protection.
Fairness.
Fair trial.
Criticism.
Right.
Work.
Peace.
Movement.
This is my mistake. Let me make it good. I raise the wall, and I will be the one to knock it down.
Asylum.
Identity.
Family.
Home.
Conscience.
Expression.
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 Participation.
Democracy.
Welfare.
Work.
Work.
Leisure.
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 Health.
Education.
Culture.
Culture.
Human rights.
Charter Dana.
Solid.
Fill in the mortar. I raise the wall, and I'm the only one. I will be the one to knock it down.
Good afternoon to all of our listeners on CJTR Community Radio at 91.3 FM and over the internet at cjtr.ca. We can also be heard on Sasktel Max at Channel 806 and Access Communications Digital Service at Channel 700. Wherever you are, welcome to Human Rights Radio, hosted weekly by Amnesty International volunteers, who are a worldwide movement of people dedicated to the promotion of human rights and the safety of all human beings. We're building a world in which every person enjoys the rights included in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and other human rights standards. Our theme song is titled 30 Words, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, written and performed by REM and a collection of musicians from around the world. I'm Jim Hutchings, and today Gord Barnes and I are looking ahead to Right for Rights, an Amnesty International event that celebrates the 65th anniversary of the United Nations Universal Declaration of Human Rights. Welcome, Gord.
Thanks, Jim.
Oh, I got to turn
the program.
I had your mic down there a bit, Gord.
Okay.
Anyway, yeah. So we're here and looking forward to December 10th. Right. And what happened last year, we had our Right for Rights event at the Artful Dodger. We're going to do that again. Thanks very much to Carol Cairns, and we've got actually a list of cases that we actually were able to have a positive impact on as a result of the writing that happened on December 10th of last year.
Okay, that sounds really a good way to start the program, to share a bit of information about that.
Yep.
That's cool.
So let's just have a look here. And according to what I have in my hand, in 2014 for December 10th, 143 countries, Amnesty supporters in 143 countries wrote more than 3.2 million messages, emails, tweets, posts, letters, and so much more as part of Right for Rights in 2014. Your words protected people and communities across the globe whose human rights are under attack. And they thank us for participating. Let's start off with South Africa. Women and girls in Makhondo finally have better access to health care during pregnancy. One clinic has increased its antenatal service from 2 to 7 days a week, dramatically reducing waiting times. That is particularly helpful for women who work on surrounding farms, as they are not paid for time taken for clinic visits. Now they can attend on weekends without losing pay. in the Philippines. We had insisted that police investigate the shocking torture of Jeremy Cory. After Right for Rights, the police announced that letters sent by a human rights organization, which we can confidently say is Amnesty International, prompted them to act. An investigation is underway. Many of us also wrote directly to Jeremy. The warden admitted that Jeremy became quite the celebrity as letters started pouring in from around the world. Jeremy said, "I can never give enough thanks. These letters give me strength. It even changed the course of my case as compared to before. It also gives courage to my wife. We are not alone in this fight. So many people also seek justice for us." And it gives us a link that we can check out to see his message of appreciation. In China, it may seem like a small thing, but our thousands of appeals for her release during Right for Rights are probably why authorities allowed something unusual. This is Liu Ping. A visit from her daughter, how that must have heartened and sustained Liu Ping. In India, the government said it will revise the number of deaths and injuries for which it is seeking compensation following the 1984 toxic gas leak in Bhopal. Ilgord, that's incredible. 1984, and the government and Amnesty has been fighting for all those years to get just compensation to the victims there.
Yeah, that was a really significant case that we wrote about last year. I remember last year in December 10th, there were so many people who were interested in sending letters in support of that particular appeal because, you know, there's such a history there in terms of the tragic consequences of what happened in India. And you know, there is some progress. You know, it's taken a lot of time, as you mentioned, Jim, that people have really not got justice in that situation.
Well, it's incredible when you just thinking about that particular situation that was Union Carbide.
Mm-hmm.
And Union Carbide, of course, then was purchased by Dow Chemical, and Dow Chemical is not any better than Union Carbide was at admitting responsibility and arranging proper compensation for the victims. So anyway, this could be, with this development with the government in India, this could be a huge step towards ensuring the companies involved pay for the true scale of the disaster. And in the USA, together we took more than 240,000 actions for Chelsea Manning. She had been sentenced to 35 years in prison after leaking classified U.S. government material. Our letters buoyed her immensely. "I'm so thankful for having all of your support to keep me optimistic," she told Amnesty. "I'm staying strong because of you." And, you know, it's just one of those things. In the United States, it can be a wonderful place to live, but if you're sort of on the wrong side of history there, it can be a very nasty place to live.
That's right.
So that's just part of what went on in 2014, December 10th. And, of course, just to recap what we do here in Regina, we have our own two letter-writing sessions that are regular on Tuesday evenings at 7 at Atlantis Coffee Shop. And now it's relatively new. I'm not sure, when did we start doing this, Gord, at the Artful Dodger?
Thursday mornings. I think we started about 7 weeks ago now.
Yeah.
And a few of our members are meeting regularly and supporters. You don't have to be a member to participate in either of these weekly initiatives with Amnesty International organizes in Regina. They're meeting at the Artful Dodger on Thursday mornings. I think you said from 9:30 to 11:30, and
9:30 to 11, I think.
11,
yeah.
And in each case, we're sending letters, appeals on current urgent actions that Amnesty International through the international movement is working on. And, you know, it's not just those of us here in Regina, and I think that's the important message relative to Right for Rights as well, who are working on these particular cases each week, or in the case of December 10th on an annual basis. It's people who are part of a large international human rights movement working together to raise our concerns with respect to a variety of human rights issues. And, you know, in the context of December 10th, we do this on International Human Rights Day. It is, as you mentioned earlier in the program, Jim, now become our Right for Rights, the largest letter-writing event in the world, and people in over 80 countries participate. And this year, we're hoping that we can surpass what we were able to accomplish last year in terms of having over $3.2 million or letters, not dollars, 3.2 million letters written. And those appeals, those letters, do help save lives. They help stop torture. They help to free prisoners of conscience. And they also send messages of hope to those who have been unjustly jailed. And one of the things that we'll be able to feature here in Regina as part of the event in Regina at the Artful Dodger on December 10th, should say that that's from 5 to 8 p.m. in the evening. We're really pleased to be able to feature a new traveling photo exhibit that will be in Regina at that point in time that Amnesty International Canada has put together. It's called Invisible Scars, and it spotlights the courageous activism of tortured survivors who are living in Canada. And the purpose of that is to galvanize momentum for the campaign calling on Canada to help stop torture. And that's an initiative that we really hope that our new government in Canada will be supportive of. We're optimistic in that regard, and looking forward to news relative to that from the new government. The traveling photo exhibit will be in communities across Canada, and it features the stories of eight torture victims who are living, as mentioned, in Canada. Many of these people have had their lives changed forever, and we want to use this opportunity as the photo exhibit travels across Canada, including here in Regina, to raise the issue of the significance of the Stop Torture campaign, and also the need to have Canada sign on to the optional protocol to stop torture. So that's something that is going to be a highlight, really, of the Regina event. But I also want to mention that if people who are listening to the program this morning are listening from perhaps somewhere else in Saskatchewan or somewhere else in Canada, wherever you're listening from, you can participate in your own community. There's already people who have posted on the Right for Rights website, which is writeathon.ca, information about where some of the events are going to be held across Canada. That'll be updated, I'm sure, over the next few weeks. And if you want, you can organize an event yourself, either in your community organization, your workplace, in your faith community, and post the information on the website and encourage other people to participate with you. It's a great way to support Amnesty International's human rights work, and it really is not a very difficult process to be involved in. Mm-hmm. The information is easily accessed on our Right for Rights website, and I'd encourage people wherever you are, whether you're here in Regina, to look at organizing an event The one that we've got in Regina isn't sort of going to be, we hope, the only one. We hope that people will be participating in schools here in Regina and elsewhere in Saskatchewan and Canada. So, you know, there's lots of ways to get involved in it and really contribute to making a difference. So I think with that, Jim, do you have one of the cases you'd like to share for this year, maybe, in terms of...
I do, and I was just looking at the activism guide. Was this mailed to you, Gord, or did you print it off?
Yep.
Okay, well, I've got actually two things to choose from. They mention these things in brief in the activism guide, but I've got a more detailed version here that I'll read. The first one is in Mexico. 3 years ago, police tortured Yesenia Armenta and threatened to harm her children. That forced her to sign a statement she never read. That confession is now being used to keep her in prison. In July of 2012, Yesenia Armenta was driving relatives to the airport when undercover police pulled her over. They forced her out of her car, blindfolded her, and drove her away. They accused her of ordering her husband's murder, and they stopped at nothing to make her confess. Yesenia was hung upside down by her ankles, suffocated, and beaten. They said they would bring my two children, rape them, and cut them up into pieces, she told Amnesty. After many hours of torture and after they'd raped me, I signed the confession. I was still blindfolded. I never even read what I had signed. Her ordeal lasted 15 hours. In detention, doctors examined Yesenia's injuries but did not document them. Months later, medical forensic staff from the Federal Attorney General's office also examined her but concluded that she had not been tortured because the previous doctors had found no signs of ill treatment. Independent medical experts have since examined her and on both occasions have concluded that she was indeed tortured. Rape and sexual violence are torture techniques often used to exert physical and psychological control over women. Yesenia has spent the last 3 years in prison, charged without proof on the strength of her confession for a crime she says she did not commit. Yesenia deserves to be free. Her torturers deserve to be brought to justice. I don't want to spend another day here, she says. I want my story to be heard, and I'm asking you to help me. The Mexican authorities need to know the world is watching. Insist on the release of and justice for Yesenia now. And of course, how we're going to do that is to write letters and send emails and tweets and all that sort of thing. What's happening now, Gord, and people may not be aware, but postage costs so much now.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a large part of our budget. When you give money to Amnesty now, postage takes a large chunk of it because it costs $2.50 for one letter.
That's right. It's really got quite expensive. And at the same time, there's a lot of other ways people can participate if that's a barrier, or if you're interested in participating by using social media. Most of the appeals provide the email addresses of government officials or maybe their Twitter account, or there's other ways of participating. So we really don't want that to be a barrier.
Mm-hmm.
As I say, there's lots of ways to participate that you can really make a difference. The case you've referenced just now, Jim, is mm-hmm. is with respect to a concern in Mexico, and you know that we've identified that on this program before, where Amnesty International is really concerned about the widespread use of torture in Mexico, has been raising that now over the last year as part of our Stop Torture campaign, and we're hoping by focusing on this particular case that we can get justice, and not only in that particular case, but for people more widely in Mexico. Another thing I should mention, and just while we're on that topic, is Amnesty International just yesterday released, the international movement released a new report with respect to the use of torture in China. And it is really quite serious. We need to raise our voices and identify that as a concern. The international movement will be highlighting that over the next few weeks. I'd encourage people to learn more about that particular concern in terms of the use of torture in China. It is just tragic in terms of what the consequences are, and we really want people to support that particular campaign in terms of identifying, you know, to the Chinese authorities how concerned we are about the use of torture in that country. I wanted to just as well share another bit of information with regard to a different case, and that's with respect to a student leader who is been subject to a long jail sentence in Burma, or many people will know the country as Myanmar. There's news from there this week, by the way. Long time, they've had elections there just earlier this week, and somebody who was a long time prisoner of conscience and then later released has been elected the leader of the country. Now, whether that is going to represent change in that country, we don't know yet, because this particular individual who I reference, who was a prisoner of conscience, has been elected president. Aung San Suu Kyi was, interesting enough, previously elected president and years ago, and she was never able to take office. Instead, the military put her in jail for many years. As I say, she was fortunately released. She's now been elected leader. However, there hasn't been a transition yet in the government. And unfortunately, there's many people who are detained as prisoners of conscience, and including one person that we're going to be writing about for December 10th, on December 10th, and you can send the appeals at any point, really. Her name is Pio Pio Ong, and she and many other people who are involved in the student movement in Myanmar are facing long jail terms, as long as 9 years, and it's just not right for people who are involved in peaceful protests to be imprisoned. The government had introduced a new law that the students were concerned would limit academic freedom. And what happened was they organized a march. This is back in March of 2015. And they marched into Yanghong. But as they got closer to the city, the police blocked them. And that's when the police beatings began, and many other students were injured. After their arrest, the police did release some marchers, but they charged other student activists, and more than 60 of them, actually, with a wide range of very questionable criminal offenses. And many of the students have been locked up ever since. Some are now in solitary confinement with very limited access to lawyers. And, of course, in those circumstances, there's really a concern where people do not have access to lawyers or are in solitary confinement, that people are at risk of torture. So we're going to be writing on their behalf. You can send those appeals at any point, but we'll be focusing on that particular case as well for December 10th.
Yeah, one of the bizarre things in Myanmar is that although Aung San Suu Kyi's party won the election, the Constitution, as written by the military, prohibits her from becoming president.
Right.
So she's going to, I think, if they're going to adhere to the Constitution, she has to pick someone to be president, but it can't be her. So it's really quite bizarre, and I think the government or the military in Myanmar has a long way to go to achieve actual democracy there. They're trying to, I think, show the world that they're becoming democratic. It's good for business, but it may be some time before democracy is actually allowed to happen. I guess we keep the letters going and watch carefully to see what happens there.
That's right. And many of us here in Regina have had a long history of sending letters and appeals on behalf of people in that particular country. And I'm, you know, hoping that there will be change. There was a, with the election and that you're referencing, Jim, there was a widespread strong support for the change in that country, and as a result, we're optimistic that there will be, but it hasn't happened yet.
Yeah, I think her party got 2/3 of the vote.
Yeah,
and the military has 25% of the seats. I think, just the way they wrote their constitution, they have 25% of the seats. So it's a kind of a bizarre version of democracy, but it's better than what they had. But just about time for our break here now, Gord. And we just happened to find a CD from Peter, Paul, and Mary.
Cool.
So we're going to have a bit of music from that. I think the midnight special will happen right after the break. So stay tuned, and we'll be right back to Human Rights Radio. Okay, Peter, Paul, and Mary, and they used to be, what the heck, eh, in the 70s, and one takes you back, and Mary Travers is gone. One of the guys is gone, too, isn't he?
A bit of history there.
Oh, gee, yeah. That kind of makes you makes you feel a little old. But anyway, we're just going to carry on here and talk about Malaysia. And We've got a YouTube video that we're going to play, and it's about a fellow who's I think he's a cartoonist, is he not, Gordon?
Right.
And the government didn't like his cartooning, so we'll bring that up here, and just have a listen.
In Malaysia, if you can't be politician, I say laugh at them. I think laughter is the best protest. I draw political cartoons that criticize Malaysia's government. And despite effort by the government to silence me, I will continue to draw until the last drop of my ink. On 10th of February, 2015, the police came to my house and detained me.
This is the place where they keep me for 3 days. So they detained me and again handcuffed me.
I currently face long imprisonment over a series of tweets where I criticize the judiciary for jailing a Malaysian opposition leader. The government has been trying to prosecute me using the Sedition Act that our country inherited from British during colonial times. The law has been used to silence critics and clamp down on freedom of expression. On 6th of November, I've been charged with 9 sedition counts and which carry a maximum penalty jail term for 43 years. This law is a very effective weapon to silence people. The government cannot introduce like an anti-laughter law, so that kind of thing. They cannot do that. Everybody gets scared. We are human. But you ask, which is bigger? Fear or responsibility? For me, responsibility is bigger than fear. I need to do this for my nation and for future generation. People normally ask, what can they contribute? Everybody can play their part. What they need to do is what they know best. I'm a cartoonist, I draw a cartoon. If you know how to write, you write. And if you know how to give a speech, or make a painting, or sing a song, you do that through your work. Just keep going and keep fighting. Don't worry about that.
And of course, that is going to be one of the urgent actions that we're going to be writing about. And just further to that, I'll just tell you more about the fellow that we were just hearing from. His name is Zulkifli Anwar Zunar Ul Haq. Easy for him to say. And what's going on there is that he is a political cartoonist. Well-known in Malaysia for his satirical attacks on government corruption and electoral fraud. He got upset when the government jailed opposition leader Anwar Ibrahim and expressed his views on Twitter. For that, Zunar now faces 9 charges, the most anyone has under the Sedition Act. The act is unreasonably severe, dating from 1948, when the government wanted wide-ranging powers to persecute its critics. And it's not the first time Zunar has fallen foul of the authorities. Since 2009, when his offices were first raided by police, he's been intimidated, arrested, and imprisoned. Police also confiscated and banned his books and threatened to close down his printers. Zunar's not alone. In the first 6 months of 2015, more than 40 journalists, academics, political activists, and lawyers were interrogated, arrested, or charged under the Sedition Act. They were simply exercising their right to freedom of expression and opinion. The space for dissent and debate in Malaysia is disappearing fast. At the moment, Zunar is not in prison. Our appeals will insist that the government drop the charges against him so that he is not jailed. Our actions will also draw international attention to other people who have been wrongly jailed and who could face up to 20 years in prison if they're convicted of sedition. Now, our urgent action here carries on with, now this is who we're going to be writing to, who we're going to be contacting. We start with the Prime Minister. So we're going to be sending a letter to the Prime Minister. And we also have his fax number. So you can write a letter and then fax that letter to him instead of spending $2.50 for the international stamp. And there's also an email address that you can send your letter to. So that makes things a lot easier. And we're also asked to also send a copy to Her Excellency Hayati Binti Ismail, the High Commissioner for Malaysia in Ottawa. And postage for that is a little easier to pay for. It's only 85 cents. And we also have a fax number for her and an email address. So on December 10th, she's going to get a lot of mail and a lot of faxes and a lot of email, as is the Prime Minister of Malaysia, for, you know, these really unacceptable incidents of suppressing dissent. As far as Zunar is concerned, he does expect to hear from you, and he would love you to create something visual to show your support for him and for freedom of expression. It could be a cartoon or a simple doodle of solidarity. It could be a drawing to show what free speech means to you. Then when you've done that, you can upload your creation to Instagram and tag with hashtag Zunar, Z-U-N-A-R, and hashtag W4R, that's the number 4, or Right for Rights, W4R. Please add your age / country as a caption and a message to Zunar if you wish. Or you could send your message to Zunar, care of Amnesty International, 3-1992 Yonge Street, Toronto, Ontario, M4S1Z7. So it's all part of a concerted effort to make the Malaysian government aware that the world is watching and what they're doing is not acceptable.
That's right. And for perhaps it's worth mentioning, just for people who may have tuned into the program during the second half of the hour, that the discussion we're having today is all about our Right for Rights events that we'll be having here in Regina and also across Canada, around the world, as part of Amnesty International's December 10th initiative, where we're raising awareness about a range of human rights concerns. One of them that I'm going to be sending an appeal about is on behalf of somebody in the United States. And his name is Albert Woodfox. And he's spent 40 years in solitary confinement for a murder he says he did not commit. His conviction has been overturned 3 times. That's amazing. His conviction's been overturned 3 times, yet the authorities in Louisiana continue to block his release. And his cell is tiny, and he's there for 23 hours a day. He has very little natural light, and he's lived for decades in isolation. It's taken an appalling toll on Albert's health. And he says, "I do not have the words to convey the years of mental, emotional, and physical torture I have endured. Even the United Nations says Albert's treatment amounts to torture. Although there is no physical evidence linked to him to the crime. Albert was convicted for the murder of a prison guard in 1972. Judicial authorities relied primarily on the questionable testimony of another prisoner who subsequently received a pardon in return. And Albert believes his conviction was politically motivated because he was a member of the radical black rights movement, the Black Panther Party. The legal process in his case was so flawed that his conviction has been overturned, as I mentioned, three times. In June of 2015, a federal judge in the United States ordered his immediate release, but Albert's freedom has been blocked at every turn by Louisiana's authorities. The one person standing in the way of his freedom now is their attorney general, who is waging a campaign of vengeance against him. And we're saying, in this case, justice is long overdue for Albert Woodfox, and we're going to be sending appeals on his behalf directly to the attorney general. We're also going to be encouraging people to send a postcard directly to Albert, where he is in solitary confinement. He has not had an opportunity to hear news from around the world over the last 43 years that he's been in jail. And these postcards from our communities can be a window on the world and encourage him until he is free. So that's a really significant case that we're hoping to highlight over the next few weeks and on December 10th. And I think you were able to find, were you able to find the YouTube video for that one, Jim?
Yes, I have. Yeah, I can bring it up here right now, and we'll just have a listen, and kind of gives you the ideas, and you can actually hear him talk about what has happened to him.
Imagine being alone in a cell, a small cell, with almost no human contact. He is in some type of legal limbo that a direct mandate from the federal court will get him out of prison. Many times over, you know, I witness people entering solitary confinement and they regress into insanity after short periods of time. But to receive letters or hear that people have gathered to demand his freedom is what keeps him sane.
They might bend me a little bit. They may cause me a lot of pain. They may even take my life. But they will never be able to break me.
It just seems incredible, Gord, that in not a third world country, not a banana republic, but in the state of Louisiana, in the United States, that a man that whose conviction has been overturned three times and with no physical evidence brought forward against him, he's still in jail.
Yeah, it's just outrageous. And as I say, we're really hoping that this particular campaign will make a difference for Albert Woodfox. I'd like to go now to a different part of the world and share information about another appeal we're going to be working on for December 10th. And that is to Greece, where there's a really significant concern about people who are literally being beaten up for being in love. And the example here is an example of a person named Costas who was with his partner, who was a refugee. They were on taking a walk in central Athens in August of 2015. Some thugs approached. They repeatedly punched and kicked them. And Costas says, "I think they could tell we were a couple, and they targeted us because of that and because of my partner's skin color. No one has been punished for the attack. Costas' leg was broken in three places. When the police arrived, he was indicating that he was treated as if he was contagious. More than months later now, no suspects have been identified, let alone punished. The mental trauma still won't go away. Costa says, my leg is okay, but whenever I see any kind of violence, all the horror and fear comes back. Both Costas and his partner are constantly afraid. And significantly, following the first attack, Costas' partner was attacked again. Now, the significant problem in Greece is the number of attacks against gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, and intersex people have more than doubled between 2014 and 2015. As well, racist attacks remain an ongoing issue. Across Greece, police and the government are failing to tackle rising violence motivated by hatred. And they're treating same-sex couples as second-class citizens. They consistently fail to provide proper investigation of any hate-motivated attacks or provide protection to everyone who has been affected. A significant problem as well is there's a lack of recognition of same-sex relationships that makes Costas and people in the LGBTI community feel even more vulnerable. It's like the government condones the attacks by not acknowledging we are real, he says. So we'll be taking action on this. There are, in this particular appeal, addresses for the officials both in Greece and the ambassador in Ottawa, and also an email address. So we'll be encouraging the Minister of Justice there to make sure there's compensation for Costas and his partner for the injuries and trauma they suffered, that there's an investigation of the hate crime, that also that people who are LGBTI people, refugees and migrants, people of color, and all people affected by hate crimes in Greece are able to live free from harassment and violence. And we're also going to be asking the Greek government to recognize and protect relationships of all gender combinations. So there's a lot of information there that I've just shared, but as I say, people can readily find all this on our Right for Rights website, which is rightathon.ca.
I was just looking at one of our success stories that's online. Hamid Ghassemi Shell.
Yes.
And so we've got a video that we can listen to there, and I think it's great. And of course, it means a lot to Gordon myself here because we met his wife in Ottawa. And so we were quite pleased when we had the outcome that we did when he was released and they were reunited. So I'm just going to bring that up. And we're getting close to the end of our time here, but I really think that this is worthwhile. So I'll get it going here. I haven't got the fastest computer in the world, but there it goes.
all of a sudden I found myself I was surrounded by five huge guys, and they asked me that if I'm Hamid Ghassemi, and I confirmed that I am. And they said, we have a few questions for you. They gave me a blindfold to put it on my eyes. They handcuffed me, and they took me inside the building. The whole thing is just a sham. Nothing is true in this case. There's no confession, no God, no evidence whatsoever. I was psychologically tortured, physically tortured. And I never confessed it to anything because I didn't know what's going on. Explain for somebody to understand when you're wrongfully accused and you've been sentenced to death, how it feels. Only that person can know how it really feels. I felt that I never gonna get out of there.
The Amnesty International Iran Circle took a very close interest to Hamid, and they started to want to really make actions, and which helped us to make it into an international case.
But the start was from Amnesty International, from here, with Antonella. She started it. She started a campaign, she expanded into Amnesty International. They came down to their knees, as far as I'm concerned. It's finished now. I'm home. She did it. They all did it. They all did it for me.
You know, there's a lot of goodness that we take for granted, and we don't realize how much goodwill it takes.
And you know, we gotta find a way to thank these people.
This could be a start.
Amnesty International supporters, with your support, I've been reunited with my family. With your support, I don't have the nightmare of execution anymore. And with your support, you got me my freedom back. And I want to thank you.
A particularly important case, Gord. I think what it highlights is just kind of, it's unbelievable what happens to these people, and we have no way of knowing, and they have no way of knowing why they're detained, and it's up to us on the outside around the world to take note and to insist that they be treated fairly.
That's right. And you know, Hamid's case was somebody, he was in prison, in prison in Iran. I think one of the final ones that you wanted to mention, Jim, if we can just take a second, is the case of somebody who is in jail in Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, for sure. A human rights lawyer, Walid Abu Al-Khair, and he is a human rights lawyer, like I say, and he was jailed under a cruel terrorism law, yet he's a prisoner of conscience, having peacefully challenged the widespread crackdown on human rights across the country. And this is a very, very important human rights urgent action, and one of a number that we're going to be writing for on December the 10th. There's quite a number of them, and he certainly is very important because he's a prisoner of conscience. He's not a terrorist, and he is a diabetic, and he's been beaten in prison, deprived of sleep, kept in solitary confinement, regularly moved from one jail to another. We really need to make things happen for him. But Gord, we have run out of time.
Just mention really quickly,
okay,
he's also the lawyer for Raif Badawi.
Yes.
Who many people around the world will know his name and sent many appeals on his behalf.
Right. So we're looking forward to seeing everybody at the Artful Dodger, December 10th, 5 o'clock. Peter Benenson, the founder of Amnesty International, often said, "It's better to light a candle of hope than to curse the darkness."